Tribal leaders from around Montana gathered in Missoula today to outline what they want from the federal government. Good evening. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us how an alternative high school in Helena is coping with a new location. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with the artistic director of the Schmoo'n Ballet about its Montana-born founder. Tribal leaders from around Montana gathered in Missoula this afternoon to tell the chairwoman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee what they think is needed to boost economic development in Indian country. Washington Senator Maria Cantwell and Montana Senator John Tester hosted the listening session at the University of Montana Law School. Many of the speakers echoed the view of the chairman of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes, Joe Durglow, that federal budget cuts are hindering Native American economic development and hurting the poorest of the poor.
We understand that nationally the economic situation is a challenge. I'd argue that tribal nations have been in a Great Depression since treaty times. Our employment levels, health status, and personal wealth are among the lowest in the United States. Congress has already determined that some programs are exempt from sequestration. It is our firm position that programs serving the poorest of the poor should be exempt from sequestration.
Chippewa Cree Tribal Chairman Rick Morissette outlined infrastructure needs on his reservation, including a new water treatment facility. Morissette says people are getting sick from contaminated water.
You can enact on all the tax incentives you want, try and encourage businesses to locate on Indian reservations. Without this most basic of all aspects of infrastructure, running water, no business will locate on our reservation.
Fort Peck Tribal Executive Board member Stoney Anketell also urged more federal funding for infrastructure, education, and housing, and he wants more bison transferred from Yellowstone Park to the northern Montana reservations.
Because for the moral value of this thing, I don't want it to stop. Because when you're identified as Tatanka Oyate and there is no Tatanka anymore, you lose identity.
Although the tribal representatives didn't mince words about their needs, they thanked Senators Tester and Cantwell for the opportunity to meet with them.
And another news from around the state. State prosecutors are appealing as illegal a 30-day sentence handed down by a Montana judge in the case of a 14-year-old raped by her teacher. Today's announcement comes after District Judge G. Todd Baugh received widespread condemnation for the lenient sentence and his comments that the victim was older than her chronological age. Montana Attorney General spokesman John Barnes says Bob will be asked to cancel a Friday resentencing hearing in the case pending a decision on the appeal. Defendant Stacey Rambold received 15 years in prison with all but a month suspended for his months-long relationship with a Billings High School student in 2007. Victim Charisse Morales killed herself before the case went to trial. Yellowstone County Attorney has said state law appears to mandate a two-year minimum prison term for Rambold.
The trustee overseeing the Chapter 7 bankruptcy of a Montana-based appliance store has sued the company's former CEO and CFO, arguing that their actions drove a moderately successful company into financial ruin and caused its employee stockholders to lose $9.2 million. KCI-TV reports trustee Richard Sampson filed the lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Missoula on August 30th. The lawsuit alleges CEO George Manlove and CFO Paul Nesbitt caused Vans to pay $600,000 per year above market prices and rent for four properties that housed Van stores and were owned by LLCs of which Nisbet and Manlove were members. It also alleges Vans paid over $350,000 in personal expenses for Manlove, who was the son-in-law of company founder Pete Van. Vans filed for bankruptcy in August 2012 and was sold for $4.5 million.
Unusually low stream flows have prompted Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to completely close fishing on the Blackfoot River and its key bull trout tributaries. FWP Region 2 spokeswoman Vivica Krauser says the 24-hour-a-day fishing closure is part of what's called the Blackfoot Drought Response Plan.
Well, it's kind of a unique angle at looking at how to protect a fishery in the times of drought. And a bunch of different cooperators got together, put the plan in place about 10 years ago. So we've got local landowners, irrigators, fishing outfitters, state and federal agencies, including Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, Trout Unlimited, and the Blackfoot Challenge that were all part of formulating this response plan. And it outlines a lot of specifics in terms of what to do when flows start to drop on the Blackfoot River and when temperatures start to go up.
And that's exactly what's happening on the Blackfoot. It's been a hot summer combined with those low flows.
It is under 500 cubic feet per second at the Bonner gauge. Yesterday when we were monitoring, flows were at 467 CFS at Bonner, which is unusually low. If you look at 80 years of record of past stream flows, this condition is really rare. We've had flows above this level 88% of the time.
Krauser says fish get easily stressed under these conditions.
When flows are low in the river and when temperatures get elevated as well, then it just puts extra stress on fish. So they like to find areas where they can just kind of conserve their energy, hole up, take it easy, if you will. And when we're out there fishing and we catch fish and we're handling them, that's just an extra level of stress that we put on them. So when we look at flows like we're seeing right now on the Blackfoot that are really low like this, you know, for the fish's sake, really the best thing we can do is not add that extra stress by fishing for them.
And so Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has initiated a widespread fishing closure starting tomorrow.
What we're looking at right now is the entire main stem of the Blackfoot will go to a 24-hour-a-day fishing closures, as well as some of the critical bull trout spawning and rearing tributaries in the Blackfoot. So that includes the Morrell Creek, Gold Creek, Belmont, Cottonwood, Copper, and Montour Creeks, and the North Fork of the Blackfoot and Landers Fork. So all those spots, 24 hours a day, and we're monitoring these flows daily. So we're hoping to, you know, we're going to get a little moisture, and the longer nights are going to help us to get those flows bumped back up. So this will be a really, really temporary closure, hopefully.
For more details on fishing restrictions or closures, Google the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks homepage, select Drought and Fire Link, or check the FWP online fishing guide.
A Montana Rail Link official says a freight train has derailed 4 miles east of Superior. Spokeswoman Linda Frost says 23 cars of the 66-car train bound for Laurel derailed earlier today along a steep embankment above the Clark Fork River. She says four of the cars are partially submerged in the river. The train was carrying a variety of commodities and had 19 empty cars. Frost says the only spillage from the derailment is cedar chips and lumber. The cause of the derailment is under investigation. Heavy equipment has arrived to begin removing the wreckage. Frost says the remote and steep terrain will make the cleanup challenging. Frost says about 20 trains travel that line each day and will be diverted to another route.
Republican Corey Stapleton is now fully diving into a run for the U.S. House. The former state senator switched this week from his bid for U.S. Senate, where he is seeking to fill the seat being vacated by Senator Max Baucus. Many expect freshman Congressman Republican Steve Daines to run for Baucus' seat. Stapleton says that's what prompted him to switch races, even though Congressman Daines has not yet made his intentions known. Stapleton does not believe he has made the switch too soon.
No, I don't think so. I think it's moving time in not just the House race, but in the Senate race and both parties. I would characterize this campaign season as probably just the opposite. People are getting in pretty late.
He says it is not his goal to steal any attention away from a potential Daines announcement. Stapleton believes his switch will ultimately make Daines' race easier, provided the congressman does switch to the Senate race. Stapleton says he has already traveled to all 56 Montana counties for this campaign and looks forward to making his case.
I'll be more glad to make it in the fall than I am in the spring because it's more fun to make it against the Democrats, but I think it's just the good old-fashioned way. We'll go out there and work it hard and earn their support.
State Representative Champ Edmonds is also currently running for Senate, but says he will switch to the House if Congressman Dane switches.
Helena's Alternative High School is adjusting to the new school year in a new makeshift facility. It's from a shuffling around of students after one of the city's elementary schools closed due to structural concerns. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says the project for alternative learning is trying to make the best of things in what was most recently an office building.
About a dozen high school students listen in a semicircle of plastic chairs in one of their new classrooms, the science room. Quite a bit smaller than a traditional classroom, there are no desks. A couple of tables are pushed back or folded against the wall. Microscopes are packed onto a shelf in the back.
This is critical. We got to get this.
18-year-old senior Vonda Jensen's red hair stands out against her black hoodie, black pants, and black high heels. She's been in the Project for Alternative Learning, or PAL, since her sophomore year.
I needed more help with reading and spelling, which I wasn't getting at Helena High.
PAL is an alternative for kids that struggle in the big high schools, for whatever that reason might be.
PAL principal Frank Jobe, for some students, it's behavioral problems. For others, it's learning difficulties. The program had been housed at a former elementary school. That is, until Helena's Central Elementary School abruptly closed last March. Central is an old school, and seismic tests last year determined it wasn't earthquake safe. So all of those Central kids needed somewhere to go immediately. Principal Jobe says the most sensible place to relocate them was PAL's elementary building.
We had a building that had still had playground equipment that was out back.
The 13th is...
So the 65 or so full-time PAL students came here, the Front Street Learning Center, a former grocery store turned mostly into offices for educational programs. Senior Vonda Jensen says it was jarring.
And that was our home, and we got removed from our home. And yeah, we didn't really have a say in it, but at least it went to something in good cause.
It was brutal.
That's Jensen science teacher Emily Peterson.
We just moved into the old Safeway building, you know, and we didn't have windows. I'm a science teacher and I don't have a science classroom. It was the students that were the most disenfranchised and disengaged with school that were the most greatly impacted.
It was dark and dingy.
But Principal Jobe says the district has worked to make the space as usable as possible, spending more than $130,000 over the summer to renovate the building. The small entrance room and the offices behind it were all opened up into a much bigger, well-lit commons area.
They tore walls down, then they just added the walls in.
A computer lab was added, and 7 classrooms now ring the perimeter of the building. Each has a window. The Learning Center does not have a gym, but Jobe says the nearby YMCA is letting PAL use its facilities for free.
So, I think in the long run, it's going to be a decent transition.
Science teacher Emily Peterson is trying to stay positive about the future. She's still skeptical now, though.
I don't feel like we're up and running. We haven't been had enough time or given the proper materials to get a classroom ready yet. So we're sort of flying by the seat of our pants.
So who has a job?
But she says PAL teachers are good at improvising, and she has time to ease into her new room. A nature class she's co-teaching for the next few weeks takes students outside for 4 periods in a row every day.
So I just wrote, I need a...
Senior Vonda Jensen is filling out her calendar for that class. She does long for her old school with what she describes as its mountains of windows.
Now we're in a different location, which isn't all the best for a school, but it's still the same. We still got the same family. We're still family.
Principal Jobe says PAL may be at the Front Street Learning Center for 3 years or more, waiting for a massive multi-million-dollar renovation of Central School. I'm Dan Boyce, reporting in Helena.
The Shmuen Ballet will celebrate its 20th anniversary with performances in Missoula and Great Falls this month. The San Francisco-based ballet was founded by Missoula native Michael Shmuen, who danced with the American Ballet Theater before becoming an Emmy and Tony Award-winning choreographer. Shmuen died suddenly in 2007, and the company is now run by his longtime collaborator and muse, Celia Fuchiel. In this feature interview, Fuchiel talks with news director Sally Mock about her transition from dancer to artistic director and about Michael Shmuen's influence on modern ballet.
Well, I only danced briefly at the San Francisco Ballet. I was a young dancer and apprentice with the company, and Michael was co-directing the San Francisco Ballet, so I actually knew him from the time I was 17. And many years later, when he had left San Francisco Ballet, and I was still in San Francisco and had already started my family and was dancing smaller projects, like with the San Francisco Opera and whatnot, he asked me to come work with him. So it was a real thrill for me to be able to return to my dreams of working with Michael Shmuen and dancing his works.
And you are known as, and were then and still are known as, his muse.
I was his muse, and it was quite an honor to have works created on me, and I think because of that I was able to dance a long time because these works were tailored for me, and I danced into my 40s, so it was very exciting.
How tough was it when he died so suddenly in 2007 to keep the company going? He was the founder. You were collaborators. It must have been an incredibly difficult time emotionally and also professionally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a horrendous shock, of course, when something like that happened so suddenly. And I was actually on the East Coast. My daughter was looking at a college, and when I got the phone call, I jumped into director mode and instructed the dancers to call his physician and call his son and call 911, and they jumped into action, and it was just a horror, unbelievable. And yet it was our devoted board of directors that said we have to keep the company going. It would have been their decision, since they are fiscally responsible, to close the company, but they felt committed. We were certainly committed to presenting the close of that season, which Michael died in April, and in early June the season ended. So we completed that season, but they were adamant that we should continue the company. And it was really their goodwill and love of the company that kept things going, and our dedication, certainly, to maintaining that. But we had to get the word out, because our public naturally thought, without Michael, there's no company. And we've shown them that there very much is a company, even without Michael Simeon, and the joy is that we get to keep presenting his works, and that's a big part of our legacy.
It is said of him that he, quote, brought Broadway and Hollywood to ballet, and not everyone was happy about that in the ballet world.
It's true. Michael did not take himself too seriously, and sometimes when dancers were getting frustrated in the studio or having a bad day, he'd say, come on, this isn't brain surgery. It's not rocket science. But and so that was really his, his love for the art form. And he really didn't turn his nose up at other forms of dance. Some people are such pure classicists that they may frown upon lesser forms, perhaps, as they might want to view them. And Michael didn't. He was inspired by Gene Kelly. He was inspired by the Ballet Russe when they came through Montana many years ago, and his mother, dear Shirley Smeon, took him to see the performance. And Michael wondered how the dancers didn't crash into each other. And his mother explained to him, well, there's a choreographer that tells him where to go, and he said, that's what I want to do. He was a very young boy. So anyhow, he was inspired by many different forms of dance and saw the value in every form of dance. And so he brought all of that together in his company.
And, of course, was dedicated to popularizing dance, which can be seen, especially ballet, as an elitist art form. And he wanted it to be a popular art form and was hugely successful in popularizing dance.
It's true. And I think so much of that, being able to popularize dance, and we see it today on the TV when you take a glimpse of So You Think You Can Dance or one of these dance shows, and sometimes you'll see ballet dancers on there now, but they're using popular music, and Michael was doing that for many, many years. And so we continue to do that today, and although the company is classically trained, they have to know various styles and genres. They have to be extremely versatile, and I look for dancers that can really meet those demands.
There's something called the Schmoon Sass. How would you define that?
I guess Schmoon Sass is probably a little tongue-in-cheek fearlessness like Michael had, and a little bit of humor. And just enjoys a lot of fun. It's evident when you watch our company dance that they're having fun and that they like each other. And although we're serious about what we do, we don't take ourselves too seriously. And so there's a certain panache that we exhibit on the stage. And we're proud of what we do.
And the company, as you have said, continues to innovate, and you have said this quote, it's my challenge to excite and challenge my dancers and thereby excite and challenge our audience.
It's true, and I don't mean challenge in a negative way, but engage them perhaps and keep them open to looking at other forms of dance. I was always grateful to Michael, for instance, for having introduced our audience to Amy Seiwert, our choreographer in residence. She's certainly not a copycat Michael Simeon choreographer. Each choreographer is unique, and her very distinctive style was introduced to our audience. And I was grateful for that, so that our audience could begin to understand and see that we have to continue to bring new things to our dancers. I mean, there's certainly value, for example, in looking at the masterpiece paintings that we can see in museums across this country. And yet you're not going to want to look at that every single day. There's going to be a variety, and we have a different style that might be introduced. And in the same way, we want to expand what our dancers do. Their vocabulary, their artistic vocabulary has to be expanded. Otherwise, they kind of stagnate. And I wouldn't want that to happen. And so it's been wonderful that our audience is coming along with us as I excite and engage the dancers in these new opportunities. The audience as well is engaged and excited. So.
And the performances in Montana will include one of Amy Seiwert's works based on the music of Patsy Cline, wonderful country singer.
Yeah, fantastic, and it is just such a charming ballet. And again, we don't do the tutu thing at Smyoun Ballet, and although the ladies might be dancing up on their toes, they've got a pretty nice two-step, I have to say.
That will be popular in Montana.
Yes, it's great fun, and we joke with Amy, and we say this is your most Smyoun-esque ballet to date. She's created other works, but she really tapped into a little bit of Michael's humor, a little bit of his storytelling with the lyrics of each song, and it turned out to be a real crowd pleaser, so we're delighted to bring it to Montana.
And the performance will also include one of Michael's works based on the music of Frank Sinatra, one of his favorite singers.
Exactly. He grew up listening to Sinatra. As his parents, he said his father would frequently take his mom up in his arms and dance around the kitchen, so he had some favorite tunes there thought of his parents when he created Fly Me to the Moon. So the audience walks out dancing and singing. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I'm sure, Celia, that Michael will love that you're celebrating the company's 20th anniversary in Montana, and particularly in Missoula.
I hope so. I know he would be so thrilled that we've been able to keep this company going, because for a time he wondered, when some of the board members asked him what his intention was, should he retire or heaven forbid, pass away. We never expected it so prematurely. But initially, he couldn't really envision a company without him. But then the more he thought about it, he thought maybe it could happen. And he entrusted me with his works and with his company. He hoped that I would be the one selected, and ultimately the board did make that decision. And we've been thrilled to keep it going, and I think he would be so delighted that we're returning. I felt strongly that we should come back to Montana in our 20th season and show that this native son, his legacy is alive and well.
No small thanks to you, and I have been speaking with Celia Fuscio, who's the artistic and executive director of the Smyoun Ballet. Celia, it's just been a pleasure to speak with you and reminisce about Michael Smyoun and talk about the ballet's evolution, and welcome back to Montana.
Thank you, Sally. It's a delight to be here.
The Smyoun Ballet will perform this Sunday and Monday evenings at 7:30 in the Montana Theater on the University of Montana campus. Tickets are available through all GrizzTix outlets. The company will also perform September 13th at the Great Falls Civic Center.
Now for tonight's weather forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and a slight chance of thunderstorms with lows in the upper 40s to mid 50s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and highs in the 80s. For central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with isolated showers and thunderstorms and lows 55 to 60 degrees. Tomorrow calls for partly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms through the day and highs 85 to 95 degrees. And for southwest Montana tonight, look for partly cloudy skies with some isolated showers and thunderstorms and lows 50 to 55 degrees. Tomorrow, watch for increasing clouds, bringing a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Your highs should be 80 to 90 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Kohler.
Good Good evening. I'm Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, the area agency on aging for Missoula and Ravalli counties. Because September is Fall Prevention Month, tonight I'd like to talk about why preventing falls is so important as we get older and suggest some ways that can help you do this. Did you know that in Montana, one in every 20 hospitalizations among older adults is due to an unintentional fall? That's 1,660 hospitalizations a year. The Montana Injury Prevention Program, a division of the Montana Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion Bureau, focuses on issues like fall prevention because falling is one of the main reasons older adults lose their independence. I know this is fact and from personal experience with my mother. My mother fell backwards at her church and sustained a head injury. Because she was on Coumadin, a blood thinner that many older adults take, she ended up with a significant brain bleed. None of her four children lived near her, so by the time the first of us arrived, she had already undergone surgery. The doctor told us the outcome would significantly change her life, and he was right. My mother went from being totally independent to having to rely on her children to manage her life. We had to sell the family home, move her to Spokane to be near one of my sisters, and all become involved in managing her affairs. All of us, including Mom, grieved the loss of her independence. She lived in an assisted living facility but really needed nursing home level of care. It cost her most of her extensive savings over the 7 years she survived. Seeing how a single fall changed my mother's entire life has made me determined to do my part to help older adults become aware of balance issues as we age and what things we can do to minimize our risk of falling. Injuries such as those resulting from a fall are not an inevitable part of aging, but I suspect many of you have either fallen once or more this past year, or you know someone who has. The good news is everyone can take some basic steps to help prevent falls. They include wearing appropriate footwear and corrective lenses to prevent slipping, tripping, or falling downstairs. Yes, ladies, you need to give up those high heels for good. Time to let practicality override fashion. Use handrails and make sure aisles and walkways are clear of clutter like magazines, clothes meant for the laundry room, shoes, and throw rugs. Put nightlights in the hallway to give your clear vision to the bathroom or any other area of the house you tend to go to at night. Exercise regularly to increase strength and balance. Several exercise programs have been proven to help with balance. One is called Stepping On, and another is Tai Chi. These are great programs to gently start you on some helpful exercise and provide you with information about other ways to prevent falls. To find out what programs may be available in your area, call the Injury Prevention Program at 444-4126 or call the Citizens Advocate number 1-800-332-2272 and ask to be transferred to the Injury Prevention Program. Have an annual eye exam to assess your vision. Very few of us don't need glasses as we age. Sometimes we don't even know how bad our sight really is until we have the exam. Regularly review your prescriptions and over-the-counter medication with your healthcare provider to reduce side effects and interactions that may increase the risk for a fall. You can consult your pharmacist or use your once-a-year free annual wellness exam with your physician to discuss your medications. I can't stress enough how important it is to seriously look at strengthening your balance. I'm only 56, but I discovered in a ski conditioning class last year that my balance was already noticeably weaker than I remembered it being. Now I'm taking extra measures to include balance strengthening exercises in my exercise regime. Falling can be a life-changing event that might land you in an institution where you swore you never wanted to end up being. If you want to stay at home for as long as possible, address your risk of falling and make a plan. Remember the story of Humpty Dumpty. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put him back together again. Don't let that happen to you. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, and as always, thanks for listening.
Susan Kohler is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.